Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Gakin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and historical territory of the Nahiwak and the Nakota. I'm your host, Michael Welch. On today's show...
This is absolutely a coup, and it's something that... people in Canada and all over the world should be standing against.
Manitoba Hydro has a lot of fingers into other mega dams that are happening in different parts of Canada.
Mining is the cutting edge of colonialism.
But first, here are the headlines from CKUW. In spite of recent victories in the courts, the indigenous Xinka people in Guatemala are continuing to face opposition from the Guatemalan government as it aligns with a Vancouver-based mining company over the Escobal silver mine. The Xinka have concerns about impacts this mining project will have on their traditional lands, waters, and way of life. Ellen Moore is international mining coordinator with the U.S.-based nonprofit watchdog group Earthworks. She explained that while the Guatemalan courts recognized a lack of consultation and discrimination in the way the Guatemalan government approved the project, the same problems seem to be repeating themselves.
So far, the process has been plagued with irregularities. The Xinka people have filed numerous legal complaints about failure to follow and uphold due process. They've filed complaints about lack of full participation and that the process is excluding them, the people who are supposed to be consulted, and is discriminating against them, sort of following the same pattern that resulted in the mine suspension in the first place.
Ellen Moore will be speaking alongside Xinka Parliament community organizer and paralegal activist Luis Fernando Garcia Monroy in Victoria, BC on November 18th at the Cadboro Bay United Church at 2625 Arbutus Road. A follow-up event will take place in Vancouver on Wednesday, November 20th. More details can be found on the Facebook page for Mining Justice Alliance under Events. Thanks to Chris Cook of CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on the traditional territories of the Coast Salish peoples for supplying some of the audio for that report. Find the entire November 14th interview with Ellen Moore on the site gorilla-radio.com. Also from CKUW, the family of two Guatemalan-born asylum seekers currently living in Waterloo, Ontario, may be facing deportation from Canada in weeks, if not days. Daniel Roblero and Sandra Morales and their six children had come to Canada in April of 2017 from the United States after the Trump administration had begun to make threats about removing illegal immigrants to that country. The group had applied unsuccessfully for refugee status, and under the Canada-U.S. Safe Third Country Agreement, no appeal was possible. Daniel has already been deported on November 2nd, and the rest of the family fears their own deportation may be looming. Stacey Gomez of the group No One Is Illegal Halifax explains that there is a lot at stake if the family is removed back to Guatemala.
One of their children suffers from it's a rare congenital condition called galactosemia, and as a result of this condition, he's at risk of liver and kidney failure, vomiting, seizures, and brain damage if the condition is not properly managed through diet. Another child was also born without fingers on his right hand, and another child has diagnosed language delays. And so they are able to access medical services that if they were to be deported to Guatemala, that this would not be the case, and that their children would suffer significantly.
For more information, you can find details on the No One Is Illegal Facebook page. Our next headline comes from Catherine Fisher of CJLY FM on Sinaixt Traditional Territory.
The BC government has released $2 million to enhance legal resources in the areas of poverty law, disability, tenancy, and immigration. This will fully fund 8 BC legal clinics in areas where there is currently a lesser level of service being offered. The funding will be awarded through the Law Foundation of BC, a nonprofit mandated to fund legal education and research in the province. 4 of the new clinics will specialize in poverty law, and 1 each will specialize in immigration and refugee issues, disability law, tenancy issues, and child protection. This structure was recommended by BC legal aid lawyer Jamie McLaren in his recent external review of legal aid service delivery in British Columbia.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back.
You swear it's not that bad. You've lost everything that can it go? The fridge is empty and the bills piled up. There's nothing left for giving up. Pick your heart up and leave this town. It's a million bad reasons to just stick around. Join the chorus of the lost and the found. All together now, salvation.
You're listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. You just heard the Brothers Landreth with Salvation Bound from their latest album, 87. Now it's time for our feature stories. The political drama across Latin America continues to dominate headlines as now longtime Bolivian leader and elected president Evo Morales announced he was stepping down and taking refuge in Mexico as a new leader announced she was taking over as president. Solidarity activists across Canada and around the world are calling this a coup in service of capitalist interests in the global north. Consequently, a number of actions have sprung up in Canadian cities this past week to register their opposition to the undermining of the popular democratic will as they see it, and to the role they see their government in Ottawa playing through this drama. In Winnipeg, over 100 people showed up in front of the Canadian Museum for Human Rights on Saturday, November 16th, to wave banners and flags and speak out against Canadian and U.S. imperialism in South America. What follows is some of the audio from that event.
No more!
No more!
Hands off Bolivia!
Hands off Bolivia!
Down with imperialism!
Down with imperialism!
Down with imperialism!
And we're here today because we know the crimes of Canadian settler colonialism.
My name is Esther Wolf. I'm here as part of the Venezuela Peace Committee today. And I'm currently a student, a grad student in political studies at University of Manitoba. The military in Bolivia, the police, and also the right-wing opposition made up of the wealthy elite of Bolivia took over and started attacking Morales supporters, started attacking members of Morales' family. They attacked indigenous people, indigenous women wearing traditional regalia, and essentially forced Evo Morales to resign in order to keep the peace in Bolivia. So this, by definition, this is a coup. This is not a democratic process. The government that installed itself after the coup was never elected by the people, by anyone. So this is absolutely a coup, and it's something that people in Canada and all over the world should be standing against. There are many people here today who are from all different nations in South America, who are from other indigenous and oppressed groups who are here to show their solidarity because none of us have forgotten the crimes of colonialism in Canada or the U.S. And it's important for us to make the connection between Canadian and U.S. settler colonialism at home and their imperialist foreign policy abroad.
My name is Lucy Pavez. I am a daughter of Chilean political refugees. I was born in Mexico, raised in Canada, and I'm part of the Chilean community here in Winnipeg. People are being tortured, detained, their eyes are being shot out just for peaceful protesting. There are children being detained, and it needs to stop, and Canada needs to say something. Trudeau's already said something about Bolivia, he said about Venezuela, but yet he has been remained completely quiet on Chile, which is disheartening, yet it's understandable because one of our biggest income trading-wise is Chile. The problem in Bolivia is democratically elected president was ousted by the military, and now there's gangs of people going around killing his supporters. Where in Chile, we're fighting the whole government and the system of government with the police, with the military. So, against them. So there are differences, but in in the background, it's all about money. It's all about profit for North America.
My own story is when I was quite young. When I first entered my teens, I met Father Jolicoeur from St. Boniface, who was a professor in Bolivia, and he brought some of his students to Manitoba to actually get them out of Bolivia before they were incarcerated or disappeared.
He supported the leftist students, the poor in their justice struggle for decades. He was murdered in Bolivia, where the right-wing people who shot him dead in his bed set his house on fire in the hopes of covering up their crime. No one has been brought to justice for this yet.
And learned a very great deal from those people about what the conditions in their country was. And more to the effect of what Canada did by having monopolies, corporate monopolies in Bolivia. How our aid was really just a scheme. Canadian aid to Bolivians was a scheme to extract more resources and American dollars from them. I already came from a political family, but this helped me start to see, you know, what was going on in the whole of the indigenous world. And I've always felt very close to the Andean people.
Viva the people!
That report was brought to us from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Occupied Anishinaabe Gaking, the homeland of the Métis Nation in the historical territory of the Nahiwak and the Nakota. On the weekend of November 8th through 10th, land and water defenders from across Manitoba, Canada, and around the world converged on the University of Winnipeg for a conference about the impacts of hydroelectricity projects in their communities. The conference was organized by the Winnipeg-based group Waniskatan. Some of the common themes that were brought forward included impacts on the habitats of the plants and animals in the vicinity of the dams, and the profound social impacts on Indigenous communities, as well as the use of hydro as a socioeconomic instrument disguised as a cheap and clean energy solution. Connie Grey Eyes is from Fort St. John in northeastern British Columbia, a Cree woman from the Big Stone Cree Nation in Wabasca des Marais. Her work as an advocate for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls led her to working with communities experiencing gendered violence springing from resource extraction. She has lived experience of the impacts of hydro damming, including the Site C Hydro Megadam project affecting her community.
We're already feeling the effects of this project with the workers coming in and the social impacts that these projects have on communities, specifically on women and girls. When these kinds of projects come into town, they drive the prices of everything, housing, food, basic needs, healthcare, everything right through the roof. And unless you're an oil field worker in my community, you live in deep poverty. And it's unnecessary, especially with a project like the Site C Dam that is already well over budget by $2 billion or something.
Denise Cole, a Two-Spirit land protector of mixed Innu descent from southern Labrador, is active with the Labrador Land Protectors and since 2011 has been standing in resistance to the Lower Churchill Hydro Damming Project, including the dam at Muskrat Falls.
I was involved in the environmental assessment stages of it, and I watched how they basically, many of us for 3 days straight, stood up and said, don't do this. And then government decided they were going to do it anyway. And in doing so, found other... This is one of the things I'm really curious about extending the conversation, because where they went to get their green light report was Manitoba Hydro. Manitoba Hydro has a lot of fingers into other mega dams that are happening in different parts of Canada. Long story short, it is over budget. We are dealing with methylmercury fallout.
Robert Spence is a harvester, artist, and currently a band counselor for Tatasquiat Cree Nation, a community affected by the Kiask hydro damming project.
The water's so dirty and so filthy, it's green, just like what Manitoba Hydro tells you, clean, green, renewable energy. It's green, all right, blue-green. There's fish that die in it. We can't even eat the fish from it no more. We fight the drug epidemic that's followed the development of kiosk, especially the cocaine dealers. They try to send us strong messages. And here's one of the messages. Wordy came right to my doorstep about 12 o'clock midnight and shot my dog right in front of the doorstep. Just to send a message to us. To leave them alone.
Isabel Cristina Zueta Lopez works with the group Rios Vivos, which has been fighting the hydro mega damming project in her community of Ituango in Colombia. In a Saturday afternoon plenary discussion, she claimed that most of her people have been displaced, murdered, and disappeared, while hydroelectric companies benefit from the armed conflict and the war.
Pero pese a las 124 masacres y a todo el dolor que hemos vivido,
but even in spite of the 124 massacres and all the suffering that we've lived through,
sabemos que la peor de las violencias es la violencia ambiental.
We know that the worst of violence is the violence against the environment.
Hoy no solo somos víctimas, sino que la mayor parte de la población está enferma.
We are not only victims today, but most of our people are also sick.
No tenemos la esperanza de volver porque la tierra ha sido inundada o destruida.
We don't have any hopes to return to our land because it has been flooded and destroyed.
Por eso reconocemos que la obligación hoy primordial que tenemos es devolver la esperanza.
That's why today we recognize that our duty is to return hope.
At the conclusion of the conference on Sunday, November 10th, this international gathering of land and water protectors staged a march to and protest at the headquarters of Manitoba Hydro on Portage Avenue. For more on Waniskatan and on the November conference, please visit the site hydroimpacted.ca. For our final feature, we provide audio from the launch of the book Unearthing Justice, How to Protect Your Community from the Mining Industry by author Joan Koyuk. The launch took place Friday, November 15th at the Social Innovation Center of St. Paul's University in Ottawa, Ontario. Joan Koyuk is the founder of Mining Watch Canada, the Ottawa-based mining watchdog organization. Koyuk's book chronicles decades of lessons learned from fighting an industry which has captured government policymakers and regulators to the detriment of the environment and Indigenous communities. The event was opened by Monique Manach, representing the unceded Algonquin territory on which the event was taking place.
And so I'm really pleased and thrilled that there are people here like you who are fighting this, and knowing that I'm not alone, my community is not alone, that there are people like the bear who will help us, who know that what is happening to the Mother Earth is wrong. And so I think Joan is a leader amongst those. And I'm very, very honored to be here tonight to tell you that little story and to open this space for you.
Joan Koyuk was interviewed by fellow Mining Watch Canada co-founder Jamie Kneen. Among other points raised was the under-acknowledged role of mining as a waste management industry.
I crammed about mining technical stuff when I applied to work at Mining Watch. And I suddenly realized that mining was a waste management industry. And what was left behind was much more significant than even the biggest nickel deposit in probably the world. That for everything they took out, and the companies now say $1 trillion worth of wealth, they had left behind this incredible amount of damage. Most of the workers, when I moved there, couldn't even live past their retirement date because they died as soon as they retired. And two-thirds of the workers were leaving on disability.
Mining is at the forefront of the colonialist project, as Joan Koyuk denotes here.
Mining is the cutting edge of colonialism. I mean, and we mine in different ways. I mean, I talk about metal and diamond mining in the book. But industrial agriculture is also a form of mining. It mines the soil. And there's many, you know, fossil fuels is another one, and I don't talk about fossil fuels, but what happens is that the people who want to extract that thing, whether it's furs or fish or metals, lay claim to it and feel it's their right once they've laid the claim to take it, and they don't have any regard, generally, for the people whose livelihood it is and was. And in mining, that's called free entry. Once you stake the land, stake the claim, you have established your right in Canadian law to go right to the development of the mine and the production of it, with some small steps in between. So it's the moment for First Nations when and Inuit people and Métis, when the third-party interest is established on the land. Like, why? What right do they have to be there? What right do they have to be there?
I'd like to welcome Ariel Duranger from what we call Northern Alberta, from Treaty 8 territory, to join Joan for another little discussion.
I come from a long line of activists. Dene people are notorious for being quite oppositional to the colonial structures. And my parents, you know, I always make a joke that I was born into activism, but I really was. The way that I organize is first you have to open our eyes to that there is that problem. And then we have to open ourselves to believe that we have the power to do something. So we have to go through those cycles. And you have to nurture community. And one of the most radical things to do in this day and age of hyper-individuality and accumulation of wealth, and, you know, really predicated on the ideologies of, like, colonization to come, take, you know, become rich and powerful, systems of white supremacy, is to nurture relationships and build community that is not reliant on those systems.
Joan Kuyuk's book, Unearthing Justice, is available in independent bookstores nationwide. Ms. Kuyuk is also available to speak to communities about the book, should they be willing to invite her. Audio for this report was provided by Greg McDougall of equitableeducation.ca. You're still listening to Groundwire Community News, broadcasting from coast to coast to coast and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report. Some communities across Canada, even when they do have access to media, often find it difficult to see themselves reflected through their local broadcasters. To address this deficiency, the Community Radio Fund of Canada announced in early November the launch of the Local Journalism Initiative. This is an effort that would provide funds to enhance these communities' abilities to produce and broadcast local news coverage. Emmanuel Sayer, the program manager for the Community Radio Fund of Canada, explains.
A community would be considered underserved if it's a news desert. They may be have newspapers that are present on there or radio stations they're able to hear, but they don't necessarily cover their community specifically. We're also looking at a situation that we see quite a bit, and that those are areas of news poverty. So this is a place where there might be some journalistic content being created about community issues and institutions, but there are significant gaps in the coverage due to a lack of capacity. So sometimes there will be media, but they're not able to properly cover the news for that area. So this program, radio stations that have campus, community, or Native Type B licenses, valid licenses from the CRTC, are able to apply to hire a journalist or hire freelance journalists to cover issues in their community. All of the content that is being created will be shared on an online platform. This is what's great about this program, is everyone will be able to benefit from the news being created by being able to kind of reuse the news, obviously giving proper credit to the journalists who originally created the content.
Gretchen King is a researcher of community radio practices with more than a decade of experience in the community radio sector. She's generally supportive of the spirit behind the initiative, but recognizes some of the limitations of the project in terms of the kind of news and views provided.
What this guideline doesn't address is the fact that many places that do have access to local news through either the private sector or the public sector, say a local CBC station or a local global news affiliate. It doesn't address the fact that private and public news gives you a very different perspective on local news than community radio news does. And we know this from years of practice within the community radio sector that really addresses a void in what is typically covered in terms of news. What local news actually gets carried on a community radio station is very different than what's carried on a public or a private station, not just in terms of topics, but also in terms of perspective.
Gretchen King also notes technological limitations affecting many radio stations, which might not be considered underserved under the initiative's guidelines.
Some stations are in very different positions, having no computers, for example, for editing specifically news content, no dedicated newsroom, no dedicated infrastructure within the station to be able to facilitate news production. And so that's a lot to get off the ground with limited funds available. Add on to that, the kind of technological equipment that you would need to cover local news as it happens, like portable professional recorders and microphones and headphones that are professional, in addition to any kind of live local news technology that stations may choose to, well, may want to invest in, but because the guidelines are restricted, are not able to.
Community radio stations will be able to apply for funding as of December 13th. The selected projects will roll out in early 2020 and continue until 2021. More details can be found at the website crfc-fcrc.ca. Look for Local Journalism Initiative under Programs. That was our community radio report. Up next, a short musical break. Iskwe with Breaking Down from the album Akakosik. That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Gakin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiwak and the Nakota. Headlines this week were written by Catherine Fisher and Michael Welch. We also thank Chris Cook and Greg McDougall of Equitable Education for their contributions. Music this week was from the Brothers Landreth and Iskwe. I've been your host, Michael Welch. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca. Thanks for tuning in.